Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be with you again. It's been a while now, but I have thought many times of the brethren here and appreciate your stand for truth, your desire to serve the Lord in the manner that is dictated in His Word. Back in the early 70s, I was preaching with a small congregation just out from Decatur, and there was one of the men who frequently led singing, and one of his favorite songs, I'm not sure if it's in this book, I didn't get to look and check that for certain, but most have probably sung it before. It's called Ready to Suffer. And whether coincidentally, just because he liked the song or because he felt that it was appropriate to my speaking, he seemed to lead that regularly right before the sermon. Ready to suffer. I take it that he probably never thought of that connection. Maybe he did. But anyway, what I want to talk about tonight for the next little bit is our suffering in this world. I have noted in reading and listening to various debates that have been held involving atheists that one of, if not the most common argument that they make to try to indicate that God does not exist is that suffering exists in the world. Their argument usually runs something like this. If there were an all-powerful God, one who is loving and merciful, compassionate, if there were such a God, then He would not allow all the suffering that we see in the world to go on. That is sometimes referred to as the problem of suffering. There have been many things that have been written on that by various ones, but I think it is worthy to be addressed. And to, while not being able to necessarily attribute every bit of suffering that exists to a particular reason, I think that there are a number of things that we can understand when we look at the Bible concerning suffering, and that it should not lead us to conclude there is no God. That is not a good argument in opposition to the existence of God. And so I call to your attention several things related to that idea in the lesson at this time. I recently taught a class for a while on 1 Peter. I think that is a good place to begin in this study. Peter was one, as an apostle of Jesus Christ, who I'm sure was well acquainted with suffering. There are several statements in the book. We'll note in particular one of them in connection with our study. And that is in chapter 4, where beginning in verse 12, Peter says, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, and that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy." Now note that to this point, Peter says, we should not, and his readers should not think that it was strange that they would at times experience fiery trials. Every person, I imagine, who lives very long in this world experiences trials, hardships, sufferings. Perhaps it is illness or disease or injury. There are many different forms it might take. But here were people who suffered because they were Christians. We see that in the text as I continue reading. In verse 14, "If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part, He is blasphemed, but on your part, He is glorified." Notice, Peter said, if you are reproached for the name of Christ. That is, because they were Christians. They should not consider that to be such a terrible thing, but to be a blessing in a way. I'll try to make that point a little further as we proceed. But when we suffer, there are good things often that come out of that. Peter basically says that here. Now, people sometimes may respond to suffering negatively. They may, as a result, blaspheme God. There are those who blame God for their distresses and their problems. Whatever they may be, God is at fault. The atheist basically does that without really believing in God. Well, there is suffering in the world and it's God's fault. If God exists, He could prevent it. Now, I don't agree with that process of reasoning, but it is true that there are those who blaspheme God as a result of suffering. And then Peter said, but on your part, that is, faithful Christians, He is glorified. Their approach was far different than these others. They also suffered. They experienced trials, hardships, and yet they glorified God. I think that is a wonderful thing. We see further, and I'm going to read verse 15 next, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Now, what Peter is saying there is, sometimes there are people who are guilty of misconduct such as murdering another person, or being a thief, or an evildoer, or a busybody. If those people suffer, then that's appropriate. It doesn't mean those things are good, but it may be that they suffer for those things because those things are recognized generally by people as evil. If one has committed murder and is imprisoned, I have no complaint or argument in favor of what happens to that person. They deserve punishment for being a murderer. If they suffer in jail for the rest of their lives, or if they are executed, as I personally believe the Bible endorses for certain offenses. I'm not going to explore that with you tonight, but if you feel there's a need, I may do that in some time to come. But anyway, if one is a thief, that person justly suffers. Or an evildoer, whatever that may involve, or even something viewed relatively in a minor way as being a busybody. Yet if one suffers for that, it's still appropriate. Here are people who are doing things that justified punishment or suffering or hardship. No complaint on Peter's part if that happens. He just is telling these Christians, don't suffer for doing that because it's wrong to do that. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, that means suffers because one is a Christian, because one is doing the Lord's will, and suffering comes. Let him not be ashamed. Nothing shameful in that. That if we suffer because we're serving the Lord, and somebody may say something negative about us, may make false accusations. You know, fairly early Christians were charged sometimes with cannibalism because they partook of the Lord's Supper. And the opponents of truth failed to recognize what the Lord's Supper really involved. And so Christians were sometimes charged with cannibalism because of their practice of the Lord's Supper. That was a wrong charge. They weren't guilty of cannibalism, but they were accused of it. There were other things they were falsely accused of that were things that just weren't so. And sometimes Christians suffered. Some even were put to death on the basis of misunderstanding or false charges. Peter said, if you suffer as a Christian, let him glorify God in this matter or some versions say, in this name. I personally like that rendering. Because one wears the name of Christ, one is a Christian. And one suffers for that, as many did, and I'll note a few cases, though not nearly all of them in the Bible. But sometimes people suffer because they're Christians. There's no shame in that. If that happens, we can recognize it is in many ways for our good. It can help us to be stronger people when we face such trials successfully. Let me go ahead and note that the Apostle Paul, I could discuss the Lord's suffering, but for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into that. I trust that all are well aware of many of the sufferings that the Lord endured. He was without sin, never did anything wrong, and yet he suffered excruciatingly in those things that led up to his death. I don't know how many may have seen the movie of some years ago that portrayed the agony of the Lord. The movie was called The Passion or The Passion of the Christ. Having seen that on video, I have concluded it was inaccurate in several things. But I don't know that it was all that inaccurate in presenting the suffering of the Lord, where he was beaten severely. The scene where the nails were put through his hands and his feet. I stepped on a nail before. It didn't feel too good, but I imagine that was nothing compared to what the Lord experienced. And not only the physical things, but the mockery that was put in his direction. Ridicule. They made fun of him. The Lord endured all of that, and yet he had never sinned or done anything that would justify that suffering. So I could at length talk about the Lord, and that'd be worthwhile. But sometimes people seem to approach such matters when we talk about the Lord, and they tend to just sort of brush that off and say, well, that was Jesus, though. If I say to people, you know, we ought to treat even our enemies right. And if we cite Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I've had people say, well, that was Jesus. He could do that, but don't expect that of me. And so oftentimes I won't use the example of the Lord in those cases. I'll cite some other person. And, of course, we have many others. But the Apostle Paul is the one that I've chosen to cite in regard to this matter of suffering as a Christian. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul, in making something a defense of himself as a servant of the Lord and apostle of Christ, a minister of the gospel of Christ, he lists a number of things. I won't read all of it, but just an excerpt. 2 Corinthians 11:24, from the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. Now, when I was growing up, I remember my mother, probably my father did at times too, but I remember there were occasions when she would send me out to the bush in the yard to break off a branch. I would bring that to her, and she would use that in a way that wasn't exactly pleasant. But there was some suffering there. Well, that was a purpose of it. Because the suffering and the unpleasantness, then I should be convinced, don't do that again. Now, one of my brothers didn't learn so quickly, so he probably got more than I did. But those switchings were nothing to be compared with such things as even Paul received. 5 times he received 40 stripes minus one, or 39 stripes. I don't recall that I ever got that many on one occasion. But Paul 5 times received 39 stripes. And those aren't just little bitty taps. But he was basically beaten 39 stripes on 5 occasions. Verse 25, 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Now, I've I've been hit with a stone. I remember unwisely, I was in an altercation with some neighborhood boys when I was young, and for some reason, we thought it was pretty good to throw rocks at each other. Or maybe they threw better than me, but I got hit right on the side of the head with one. I didn't enjoy that. I think that was the last time that I got involved in a fight with stones being involved. That wasn't pleasant. Paul was stoned on this occasion mentioned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in the deep. He mentions a whole number of things there that were sufferings that he experienced. There was not one of those, to my knowledge, that Paul received what he deserved. That is, because he was a murderer, he suffered one of these things. Or because he was a thief. No, none of that. He received these things in connection with his being a Christian. And I believe he glorified God in enduring those things that he mentions. Though he says in verse 30, if I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity. Paul didn't want to brag about the things. It was somewhat a matter that he was compelled to do to make his defense here. My point is that Paul suffered. He's an outstanding example of it. There are many others. We could talk about Job. Job, of course, was not a Christian. It was long before the time that there were Christians. But he was a servant of God. He's described as being an upright man, a blameless man, the greatest of all the men of the East, whatever all that might entail. And God even commended the life that Job lived to the devil himself. As Satan went before the Lord, God said to him, you recall, have you considered my servant Job and the kind of man he is, the kind I've just described? Well, Satan basically sort of, you say, well, no wonder. You know, after all, look what you've done for him. You've given him all this. He has great possessions. You've built a hedge around him. I can't do anything to it. And so God granted permission for Satan to afflict Job. I'm sure there was suffering even in the first stage of that. I would imagine that the loss of his children was extremely burdensome to him. Because earlier there, it even indicates that he often would intercede for them, offering sacrifices to God with the possibility that his children had sinned against God. He was concerned about them, and they all died. He had great possessions, various animals, and they were taken away from him. That would have been a difficult situation. And yet, Job did not sin in connection with responding to that, what had to be great suffering on his part. But Satan, of course, and this part is a little humorous even to me, on a later occasion when Satan was among others who came to present themselves before the Lord, and it starts out like God sort of nudging Job about what he had claimed before, that, you know, Job is going to turn against you if you allow him to experience suffering. So God says to Satan, have you seen my servant Job? Have you noticed him? Have you looked at what he does? Even though Satan has been allowed by God to afflict Job in the loss of family and possessions, not personally at this time. But anyway, have you noticed about Job? Even though you incited me against him, allowing you to afflict him in these, look at him. See, he has withstood it. And, of course, Satan doesn't give up easily. And he says, well, you just touch him personally, and he will curse you to your face. In other words, let him suffer some more. Let him suffer more personal affliction such as his own health and well-being, and he'll turn against you. So God allowed that to be attempted. And the book describes the fact that Satan was not successful, and Job did not turn against God. The bulk of the book is an effort by his so-called friends to get him to see what his situation involved. That Job, you must have sinned. That's what brought this on. No, Job was a righteous man. It had not been sin on his part that brought these things to be. In large part, it was because he was a servant of God that he suffered as he did. That he was singled out in a special way. And the wonderful last chapter of the book has the culmination of his efforts, of his so-called friends, to cheer him up and have him deal with his problems. And God blesses him, interestingly, with twice as many possessions that he had before. That the same number of children were restored to him. I've considered the possibility, someone suggested one time, as certainly possible, that his children may have been brought back to life. That's a possibility. It would seem to be highly strange that after all these things had happened, that he and his wife had the same number of children, same number of boys, same number of girls, and it just happened that way. It may well be his children were restored to life. But I'm not saying that's definitely true, but that's something that was certainly possible. There have been many instances of people being brought back to life by the power of God. So anyway, Job suffered, but he suffered as a servant of God. So we should not draw the conclusion, as some seem to do, that if something bad happens, it's because we've sinned, because that may not be so at all. We cited three cases to show that's not true. When Jesus suffered greatly, even being put to death, it wasn't because of sin on his part. In fact, it was because of our sin. When Job suffered, as we mentioned, it wasn't because of his wrongdoing. It was because God allowed Satan to test him by bringing adversity to it. Or in the case of Paul, Paul suffered because he was a faithful servant of the Lord. That kind of thing definitely happens. The Bible tells us that all those who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. It's going to happen. It may not be that we'll be put in prison, but it might. It may not be that we'll be put to death, but that could happen. It might be that someone, as some used to do quite commonly, might just say, "Why, you camel-like," and say some uncomplimentary things about us. Maybe that'll be the form of persecution. They may ridicule what we believe and call us something like water dogs because we believe what the Lord said about the requirement of water baptism. There are all kinds of forms that persecution and suffering can take. But if we serve the Lord, then we will suffer persecution. If we never suffer that, then we ought to question, am I really serving the Lord? Because all who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. So if we're not suffering, you draw a conclusion. We're not suffering, something must be wrong in regard to the manner in which we are supposedly serving the Lord. In John chapter 9, there was an occasion in Jesus' ministry where he saw a man who was blind from birth. In verse 2, Jesus' disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now note the basis for the question, which I have no reason to conclude was not sincerely asked. This wasn't asked by the wicked opponents of Jesus. They sometimes asked him questions insincerely. But these were asked by Jesus' disciples. Who sinned? Somebody must have sinned because he's suffering blindness. Was it this man himself? Well, that to me is a little bit silly. He was born blind. Now, what did he do before he was born blind that would have brought about blindness when he was born? That doesn't make sense to me that they consider that even a reasonable possibility. Or could it have been his parents? Maybe his parents were guilty of sin, and therefore their child suffered blindness from his birth. The disciples seem to think those were reasonable possibilities. But look at Jesus' answer in verse 3. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. The works of God would be revealed through the fact that this man was born blind. Now, I may not understand all of that, but it seems to me it provided a context in which Jesus could reveal the great power of God, restoring or giving sight, maybe for the first time, of this man who was born blind. The opportunity to demonstrate that was in the context that he was in that shape. He was born blind. It wasn't his own sins that caused it. It wasn't his parents' sins, according to the Lord. It was simply an opportunity for God to do some wonderful works. Now, I use that text without discussing further now, in the sense that it shows that people may attribute adversity, suffering, whatever it is, whatever the form, they may attribute that to somebody's sin. Maybe the individual himself sins. Well, now, sometimes the things that we do wrong may result in suffering. Sometimes that can happen. Let me mention a case back in Genesis 4 of Cain and Abel. You're familiar with the story given there, I'm sure. Both of them brought an offering to God. Hebrews 11 verse 4 summarizes it. By faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. So Abel brought an offering to God that God was pleased with. I conclude because the Hebrew writer said that he did that by faith, and because Romans 10:17 says faith comes by hearing the word of God, that God told Abel what to do. You do this. Abel believed him, and he obeyed him. Cain did not. Now, I don't think, as someone might propose, well, God just didn't tell Cain what to do. He told Abel what would be acceptable, but he didn't tell Cain. That's what somebody might say. I don't believe that. God is not such a respecter of persons. The response of God to what Cain did showed that God was displeased because of the choice that Cain made to offer what he did. And that's all I'm really going to say about that. You have a case where people had choices either to do what God says or not. And because, in that case, Cain did not obey the Lord, he experienced punishment. You can read from Genesis chapter 4 and get all the details. But basically, among other things, there was an identification of Cain in some way as being someone who might experience suffering from others. The so-called mark of Cain is sometimes discussed in that connection. I don't know exactly what that was, but I conclude this, that Cain disobeyed God. God did not accept what Cain offered, and Cain was punished for what he had done. Now, of course, a part of all that, by the way, is that he killed his brother. Which brings us to this point that I'll mention in that connection. Sometimes people suffer, though they've done nothing wrong. Let that sink in. What had Abel done wrong, so far as we know from what the Bible said? Not one thing is mentioned that I know of that Abel had done wrong. The thing that is recorded that he did was right. God was pleased with it. He had an acceptable offering that he brought to the Lord. And yet he suffered the loss of his life. I'm not sure the details of his being murdered, but I'm guessing that Cain didn't have such concern as a lot of people do today about the suffering of people when they maybe put them to death. Yeah, make sure you make them comfortable. Make sure they don't suffer any. We don't want them to suffer. We just want them to die, which doesn't make much sense to me. God, in the Old Testament, announced a method of stoning to death for certain evildoers. I'm sure that was painful. I didn't experience it, but I'm pretty sure from the experience that I did have that being hit by rocks repeatedly, so much so that it results in the death of the person, was not something that was enjoyable. There was suffering there. And it doesn't seem they were told, now be careful, don't do anything that'll cause any pain. Sometimes people experience pain, even if sometimes they may be innocent of wrongdoing. The case of Stephen in the record of Acts, in chapter 7, we find that Stephen had an opportunity to make a defense before the Jewish council. They rejected him, and they stoned him to death. I'm pretty sure there was some suffering experienced by that righteous man. And he suffered because he told people the truth, and they didn't like it. We have the case in the Old Testament of a man by the name of Naboth. If you don't remember that story, maybe I can talk about that at some time, or maybe you already know the details of that. But he had to face the wicked plot of Jezebel. And the husband, Ahab, the king, didn't do anything to stop it. In fact, if anything, he encouraged her to proceed in her wicked plot. Naboth was killed. He was killed not for any wrongdoing, but for taking a stand for God's will in regard to the property that had been given to them in the Old Testament. Sometimes righteous people suffer. Never look at a situation without knowing all the information, which often we won't know, and think, well, that person was a sinner. That's why he or she suffered. Maybe that's not the case at all. And by the way, going back to the atheist's approach, well, there's suffering in the world, so there's no God, or he wouldn't allow things like that. Really? Who is it that has the right to determine what happens to people? Well, God primarily makes that decision. God will make that decision concerning eternity. That's another problem area with the atheists. Sometimes they argue, well, there can't be an eternal fire that we call hell, because that would just be totally unreasonable. There can't be a God, since the Bible teaches that. Well, I conclude that God, as our Creator, and Jesus as our judge, and I'd rather have him as judge than anybody else, including me, because there's no one else qualified by knowing all the facts and being perfectly just in dealing with people. Jesus will make the right decision. And so God is the one who has made the world and set in motion these things, many of which we have referred to in the lives of godly people even. And when people suffer things, it doesn't necessarily mean it's because they deserved it. When I was in high school, one of the boys in my class was driving down the street one day, and a child ran out between some cars, and he was killed. He or she, I don't remember. But anyway, the child was killed. There was not any intent to kill the child. It was, as I understand, an accident, but the child was dead. Now, had someone sinned necessarily in order for that to happen? Not necessarily. Another factor that enters into many situations is that we live in a world that is cursed because of sin. The account there in Genesis, when Adam and Eve sinned against God, they were expelled from the garden. They were deprived access to all those blessings that God had afforded them earlier. And they entered a world where there were bad things that went on. There were thorns and briars and things like that that could choke out possible food supply. They entered a world which, as we experience today, sometimes has earthquakes or tornadoes or fires or volcanic eruptions. That's not necessarily the fault of somebody living today. It's a consequence of living in a world where such things exist, and they exist largely because Adam and Eve sinned against God. They were deprived of that wonderful place that we call the Garden of Eden. They suffered sometimes in the world, and that's happened all down through the course of time. One doesn't necessarily suffer because one has personally sinned. Sometimes we suffer in spite of sin, on the part of the sin that someone else has committed, like Cain. We do not have the capacity to understand all of the workings of what goes in the world and draw a conclusion that this event happened because this person sinned. I can't make that connection. I don't know. The Lord can. But that's not my decision. And I'm not going to attribute every bad thing that happened to the fact that this person is guilty of sin. Sometimes we can attribute that. You know, a drunk driver who runs over somebody and kills them, I may be able pretty well to determine that person had not been drunk and driving that automobile, then that person wouldn't have been killed that way. Sometimes we see pretty close connections, but we can't always do that. What I recognize is that sometimes people suffer even though they serve God. Sometimes people suffer because of their sin. Again, the case of Cain would be one. The case of the man of God who believed the lie of the old prophet and went back and ate bread and drank water at that man's house, and as a result, God used a lion to kill him. Well, he suffered that because he sinned. He disobeyed God. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes we just live in a world where there are bad things that happen. And there may not be any direct connection between any given person's sin and what happens to that individual. There may be no connection. Just quickly here, let me mention Hebrews chapter 12. We learn the lesson that God sometimes chastens us. That means God punishes us. God whips us for doing wrong. I imagine most of us probably had attention of that kind applied to us when we were children by a parent, maybe by a grandparent. We suffered because we did things that were wrong, and God used that means to try to bring us to a point of correction. Sometimes God administers His chastening. So something bad in that case was because God brought it about. That could be the case, although I cannot unravel every situation and know that's why it is. That is one thing that it could be. So by way of implication and application of these principles, how should I think about suffering? that first, God sometimes brings suffering. I don't have time to go into all the different times, even in the Bible, those cases are mentioned. But he killed many in the great flood. He killed people in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and other cities of that area. He struck Uzzah dead. God sometimes brings or has brought suffering. God sometimes has chastened his children. Paul received a thorn in the flesh to buffet him. I think God was behind that. He was trying to teach Paul a lesson and to bring him to understand that he ought to serve God and he ought not to have in his mind the idea he was some great one and, let on that he was just the greatest thing that had ever come into the world. No, I don't believe Paul believed that. But God kept him in some ways from it by giving him a thorn in the flesh to buffet him. Sometimes people are punished for their sins. Sometimes there may be no connection whatsoever between suffering that we experience and our relationship to God. I remember a case, I guess it was back in the 70s, when there were so many tornadoes that struck North Alabama and many other places. And there was a case where there was a man who lived in a trailer park at south of Tanner. And that trailer, that mobile home was struck. It was severely damaged and the man was injured. And he was taken up the road a mile or so to a church building. And while there, another tornado struck that building and the man was killed. Why did that happen? Well, I cannot know why everything that happens does happen. But I know this. We ought not to blame God for wrongdoing, as sometimes people do. Something bad happens in a person's life and they begin to blame God. That's a dangerous thing. To accuse God of doing wrong. You know, King David did in the case of Uzzah. When God struck Uzzah, David complained that God had done that. And he named the place Perez Uzzah, outbreak against Uzzah. David was wrong to blame God in any sense of wrongdoing. God doesn't do wrong. But God has reasons for what he does. I cannot explain everything that happens in the world. But I do know that sometimes people suffer for doing right, and we're blessed when we do that. God will work that for our good. Sometimes people suffer for doing wrong. That should let us know that we don't get by in the sight of God with wrongdoing. We need to correct what we do that's wrong while there's opportunity. And then most things I just may not be able to explain, nor do I have to. I recognize that I need to serve God and do His will in all things, and ultimately, everything will work out for my eternal welfare and for yours as well. There are other things we could say, but I'm going to stop at that place. If there might be anyone here tonight, since I perhaps have met everyone, but I don't know the condition that everyone is insofar as God is concerned, there is the opportunity that we are given to make correction for wrongdoing, to turn back to God and to seek His blessings. And that is one purpose for the singing of the song that's been announced. And we'll do that as we sing at this time.